Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Friday, October the 30th. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up in Tanzania, the CCM retains its hold on power as John Magufuli is elected president. Voters remain divided.
I must say I am deeply shocked. I'm shocked because there are so many irregularities, and before announcing this, they would have sorted them out. So I am shocked. I don't know where the country is at.
The whole exercise has gone well. Everything was conducted well.
And South Sudan's government denies allegations of war crimes contained in a report released by the African Union.
President Salva Kiir never sanctioned anything that would violate human rights because he doesn't believe on this.
And we will also be hearing how rights activists are trying to get the death penalty abolished in Zimbabwe. Stay tuned.
Top story.
In Tanzania, the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party has been returned to power. Official results say their candidate, John Magufuli, garnered 58% of the vote, putting him comfortably ahead of his nearest rival, Edward Lowassa of Chadema, who secured 40%. However, these results were disputed by the opposition even before they were announced, with Lowassa calling on Wednesday for a recount. The only woman candidate in the race, Anna Magwara, polled less than 1%. From Arusha, Charles Engereza reports.
After 4 days of vote counting, the National Electoral Commission in Tanzania, NEC, declared John Magufuli the winner of the general election that has been disputed by the opposition. The main candidate for the opposition, Edward Lowassa, cited irregularities and said the commission had entered false results in favor of the ruling party's candidate, John Pombe Magufuli. As of Thursday, Lowassa had declined to sign the consent forms and wanted a recount of the vote. Efforts to get comments from the opposition were proved futile, as the coalition high-ranking officials couldn't be reached over the phone. Reliable sources said that the opposition officials were engaged in a meeting and would address the press conference to declare their way forward immediately after the results were announced at around 5 o'clock East African time by the chairman of the commission. There are some reactions from the political divide in the country. While some Tanzanians have hailed the election as free and fair, others are not happy with the outcome.
I must say I am deeply shocked. I'm shocked because there are so many irregularities, and before announcing this, they would have sorted them out. So I am shocked. I don't know where the country is at. You know why? Tanzanians have decided to speak louder. And I believe the voice of people is the voice of God. We have seen so many things rigging, and the government did not want to listen. They've come out, they've decided to mention that the president is Magufuli. And to me, I can say, I'm praying to God that things should not go bad the way it looks. We have seen it as well. We have seen it. Every one of us was seeing them going around downtown, army surrounding everywhere. But you know what? Tanzanians are not scared of this. Come back to election 2010, we had a bad experience. So seeing them around, we knew exactly what was going to happen.
My reaction is very polite. In really sense, I can say happy birthday, Mr. New President John Pombe Magufuli. Of course, the whole exercise has gone well. Everything was conducted well. To me, I see is very good feeling that now we are in a peace way. The exercise was done in a harmony way. And most of reports, they are telling us that from the early reports of different organizations, of different observers, they show that the exercise was held very nicely. Of course, even the environment you can see in different places from Dar es Salaam, Arusha, Moshi, the places are very peaceful. So, of course, the people in Tanzania, they are realizing that they have now crossed the bridge.
According to the Tanzanian constitution, the results of presidential elections cannot be challenged in the court of law once declared by the National Electoral Commission. His win continues CCM's dominance in Tanzania since its formation in 1977. However, election observers have called for a speedy resolution of the stalemate in Zanzibar, the semi-autonomous island that makes up the union with Tanzania, where elections were annulled on Wednesday over allegation of fraud.
Charles Engereza reporting from Arusha. These elections were billed as the most hotly contested in half a century of rule by the CCM. Now that they are officially over, what was the general impression that they left behind? Jane Iyeku asked Generale Ulimwengu, a political commentator based in Dar es Salaam, for his assessment of the results.
The Electoral Commission, though contested in certain areas, would tend to show that it reflects the reality on the ground. It mirrors what we saw during the campaigns, what we knew about the various contending actors and all the politics going around the country, pitting the ruling party, CCM, and against the opposition, Chadema mainly, supported by the other three organizations, political organizations, supporting the so-called UKAWA, which is the People's Constitution Alliance. So I don't think there was much variance between what we expected, what we saw during the campaign trail, and what we have been told is the result. Although there are still some misgivings, some complaints, and maybe we are going to get some petitions.
Yeah, the opposition has rejected the results and accused the Electoral Commission of posting some false results in favor of Magufuli. Is there enough evidence to suggest this?
They haven't made clear what they are complaining about and the details of their complaints and the areas where they noticed or observed any misdeeds or irregularities. The sad thing is this cannot be taken to a court of law because Tanzania is still operating under a very, very old electoral law, which says once the Electoral Commission has pronounced somebody the president of the country, then there is nothing you can do about it. You can't take it to a court of law. You cannot lodge a petition. It's done and dusted. It's a fait accompli.
Now, with such allegations against the ruling party, do you think the party still enjoys a lot of popularity among ordinary Tanzanians compared to its past days?
It does have a popular base, that is for sure. The votes have shown that, and it's not just a small support base. It's quite big. It's quite huge. Although there are inroads into that support that have been mounted by the opposition parties, especially among the urban, among the youth, and among the so-called educated classes, still the party has a lot of support in the rural areas, among the more elderly people and the less educated people. However, because of the perennial problems that people have been talking about, the issues of poverty, deepening poverty, issues of the quality of education and the quality of the water supply and social services generally, there have been some inroads made into that support by the opposition parties because they've come out with a this call for change, and this has resonated with the people. I do not know when this will grow into a movement that is capable of the ruling party, but it's certainly growing. And it won't be long before the ruling party officials take note of the fact that the dissension movement, the people who say we are tired of this because the poverty levels are not changing, we are not getting what we need to get to be able to live a decent life, and therefore we want this party out. I don't know when that will take place, but for the time being, it hasn't taken place.
Generale Ulimwengu in Dar es Salaam.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
A report released by the African Union earlier this week said forced cannibalism, mutilation of bodies, conscription of child soldiers, and other human rights abuses have marked the war in South Sudan. The report added that atrocities were committed by both sides and recommended the creation of an African legal mechanism to bring perpetrators to justice. Atinitwik Atini is the spokesperson for the South Sudanese government, and Jane Ayeko asked him for his response to the report.
We partly agree with the report on the finding that there is no genocide in South, that it was committed in South Sudan. And we reject some of conclusions which says there was no coup on the 15th of December. If there was no coup on the 15th of December 2013, then what causes the fight to break? It is difficult for anybody to convince the people of South Sudan. The government itself recognizes the fact that there are some individuals who might have taken law into their own hands. And that's why there was a commission of inquiry formed by the government, headed by former Chief Justice John Wolmakech, which actually locked up more than 100 soldiers that were actually suspected of taking part in human rights violations. So we agree with the report that there are individuals who have taken law into their own hands. But we disagree on the fact that they say it is a state.
Now, on the other hand, the report also pins President Salva Kiir to have recruited irregular militias to organize killings of the Nuer people. And in the end, this resulted into an ethnic conflict between the Nuer and the Dinka. Is your president liable for these findings?
No, not at all, because President Salva Kiir is on record. He himself came to free the son of Thabang Dengai, who perpetrated the coup of 15th of December, and the son of Riek Machar. These are grown-up, fully mature children, who are actually more than 20 years. But President Kiir allowed them to go and join their fathers, whether they will be joining the rebellion or not. President Kiir allows them because he respects human rights very well. President Salva Kiir and all this knows that he never sanctioned anything that would violate human rights because he doesn't believe on this. The conclusion might have been drawn from one side, because when you go to, the country is so divided, the communities are so polarized. And when you go to one side of the conflict, you will find different stories, happening here and there.
This report have in any way, or will it impact in any way your membership with the African Union, considering that the people who produced the report are an African Union Commission of Inquiry?
The commission, relies on evidences that were collected from the people thought to have been the victim in the conflict, leaving the true picture, of the fact that the conflict started, when Riek Machar and his group, after they were removed from the government.
The African Union Commission of Inquiry investigators recommend that an African-led court be established to prosecute the perpetrators. Will your government be willing to cooperate?
Yeah, the government is already willing, and he has already done that by signing the agreement, which includes the establishment of the court to try those thought to have committed violations.
Do you think these findings could impact on the just-concluded agreement, which is seemingly fragile?
Well, it can have great, impact on this, because the players, both in government and the rebels, and some of those who are actually named, have the great potential of endangering peace agreement.
Atene Wek Atene, spokesperson for the South Sudanese government.
Human rights.
In Zimbabwe, human rights activists have started a campaign to remove the death penalty from the country's statute book. The last time anybody was executed in Zimbabwe was 10 years ago, and campaigners argue that after this decade-long unofficial moratorium, the time has now come for the complete abolition of the death penalty. From Harare, Columbus Mafunga reports.
Around 200 prisoners in Zimbabwe are currently on death row, meaning they could face the death penalty at any given time. Some of the inmates have been waiting for 20 years. They were either convicted of murder or treason. A human rights group, Veritas, has since asked lawyer Tendai Biti to help stop these prisoners from being executed. Biti says they have suffered long enough psychologically.
In Zimbabwe, the delay has been coming from the fact that the government has not been willing to execute people, which is a good thing. So you now have a situation now where there are people on death row waiting execution. The majority of those have been waiting for death row for over 15 years. Can you imagine the horror of not knowing whether you are alive tomorrow? So it becomes punishment on its own. That on its own becomes cruel and degrading punishment.
This month, about 20 of those on death row filed applications through their lawyer Tendai Biti to the Constitutional Court challenging their death penalty sentences. The court responded Wednesday saying some of the matters would be heard early next year. The last documented prisoner execution in Zimbabwe took place in 2005. Since then, there's been a de facto moratorium on capital punishment. Added to that, the new constitution passed in 2013 makes it difficult for a death sentence to be passed. When the new law was adopted, nearly 90 prisoners were on death row. At that time, Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, who also serves as Vice President of Zimbabwe, said this.
We have 89 people on the death row. Two of them are women, 87 are men. And they are lucky, they are not signed papers for their execution. So at the end of the day, I think we commit them to life imprisonment. I would even rather resign than sign the certificate.
But human rights lawyer BT says that is not good enough, as ministers can change. He wants death penalty out of Zimbabwe's statutes completely. The former Zimbabwe finance minister also wants those sentenced to imprisonment to be eligible for parole, but only if there's proof that they've reformed. I asked him how confident he was that the death penalty would be abolished.
I'm very confident that the courts will do the right thing, because it is the right thing. So I'm very confident. And also I've really, really worked. The heads of arguments I've prepared are out of this world, because I believe in the cause. Even the court yesterday accepted the quality of the work we have put in. I wish that Zimbabweans and every people in the world would actually go to prison and speak to those people, because you'll be in the same position that I'm in, that capital punishment should be abolished.
And that report was compiled by Columbus Mavhunga. African states are set to benefit from $10 billion in concessional credit from India. That was announced by Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi at the India-Africa Forum Summit in New Delhi on Thursday. In addition to these loans at advantageous rates, India will also provide another $600 million in grant assistance. Modi described India's relationship with Africa as two bright spots of hope in the global economy. Musa Obale reports from New Delhi.
It is an atmosphere of optimism and new wave of hope, as leaders of over 1 billion Africans meet leaders of another 1 billion plus to forge a better partnership. A new concept championed by Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi to create a sustainable economic and environmental climate for the Southern Hemisphere Alliance. At the center of it is trade, worth some $70 billion between the 54 African countries and India, a new emerging light in the global economic arena, hoping to replace China, the current biggest trading partner to the continent. Beyond the oil diplomacy, which many analysts see as behind the new wave of interest by India, is also India's quest to export information technology to the entire nooks and crannies of Africa, build infrastructure and power sector in the continent, according to India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
We will raise the level of our support for your vision of a prosperous, integrated and united Africa that is a major partner of the world. We will help connect Africa from Cairo to Cape Town, from Maracas to Mombasa, help develop your infrastructure, power and irrigation, help add value to your resources in Africa, and set up industrial and information technology parks.
On the way to actualizing some of the promises are a concessionary loan of $10 billion announced by the Prime Minister in the next 5 years, and 50,000 scholarships to African youth. Beyond the energy diplomacy, the summit, which is the third in the series since the creation of the partnership 8 years ago, dwelt much on the global politics, and more especially the restructuring of the World Security Council. The Zimbabwean president and the current chairman of the African Union, Robert Mugabe, says enough is enough for the underrepresentation of one-third of the global population on the council.
One-third of the population of this world which at the United Nations is treated as a little kid. We say no. 1/3 of the population of the world must be respected. Its rights must be respected. Its equality must be respected. And that is why we say, let's amend the United Nations so it be the United Equal Nations. We are not that.
The atmosphere of rebellion against the current global order, which pervades the Indira Gandhi Stadium, the venue of the summit, also saw International Criminal Court declare Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir participating in the entire proceeding and delivering speech despite the request for his arrest. What remains to be seen in the new cooperation is how the partnership will tackle the abject poverty and youth joblessness ravaging 2/3 of the population.
Musa Ubale in New Delhi.
Your say.
Now, what have you, our loyal listeners, been making of the stories we've been covering this week? To find out, we join Jane Ayeko and Privilege Mushandri.
Well, this week we reported about the protest by the Radical Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, in South Africa, demanding for economic reforms.
And so, what did the listeners have to say about the Economic Freedom Fighters' protest in South Africa?
Our regular listener, Aliyu Muhammad in Nigeria, thinks that it is good that the EFF are demanding a decrease in interest rates, which is good for the poor and some pensioners. He adds that the South African government should meet the demands of EFF for the good of the less privileged ones. We also had Joel Imopusi from DW Listening Club in Kenya, who said that the economy of South Africa needs reforms.
Very interesting. It looks like South African government has a lot to deal with protests one after the other. I mean, we started with the students protesting, you know, against the proposed increase in tuition fee, and then come the economic freedom fighters this week. Really so much on South Africa. But that's not all. We also reported on elections in the different countries in Africa. There were elections in Ivory Coast and there were elections in Tanzania. So do you have anything on this?
Yes, sir. We had Ras Ngogo of Tanzania, and he had something to say on the Tanzania elections.
We are wondering to see that the candidate for president who has been running that campaign, he has been claimed to be the winner, but according to the results which is coming out now, we are wondering to see that he is going to be defeated.
Ras Ngongo sharing his thoughts on the Tanzanian elections. We also reported on the unresolved death of an asylum seeker, Uri Jalo, a Sierra Leonean national who allegedly burned to death in a police cell in the eastern German city of Dessau in January 2005. And we put this for our listeners, and I'm sure we got some comments. Isn't that so, Privilege?
Yes, indeed. We had Aliyu Muhammad Al-Kasim from northeastern Nigeria, who said the issue is complicated since both parties, the Human Rights Watch and the police, claim to have strong opposing evidence. And he also says there is need to wait for the results of the comparative investigations. And his viewpoint is that Jalo could not have deliberately banned himself. That's all we had.
Privilege and Jane, many thanks. Remember, the address for your comments is AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. You can, of course, send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or an SMS to country code 49160957 59510.
Get news delivered to your email inbox. Just sign up for our newsletter. Go to dw.com/English/newsletter.
A brief reminder of our main stories before we leave you. The presidential elections in Tanzania have been won by John Magufuli from the ruling CCM party. We've also been hearing about an African Union report on rights abuses in South Sudan and about a campaign by activists in Zimbabwe for the abolition of the death penalty. Have a pleasant weekend from me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.